Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. Let peace be unto you. First, we acknowledge the one Lord of all the worlds, Allah. For Him is the praise. We pray the prayers and blessings of peace be upon Muhammad, the last of the prophets, the universal messenger, and upon his family and upon his companions, and what follows of the appropriate salutation. Believers, all people, Muslims and non-Muslims, if non-Muslims are here, we wish you peace and Allah's mercy and His blessings. On this occasion, as on all occasions, we ask for Allah's guidance and for approval, and hope that Allah will accept what we offer. Last evening was another great occasion for us, the 11th testimonial banquet. And I wanted to say last night that I was really very, very happy and very pleased inside to see so many distinguished, well-known, well-established people for their good works and hard works joining Imam Clyde Rahman and the supporters of Cleveland, the Muslims of Cleveland, from the Muslims of Cleveland, the congressman, Louis Stokes, and all the other, the honorees and all the other dignitaries from the outer community, especially from public service. It was really a beautiful evening, and to see them so relaxed with us, that's a new thing for us. Years ago, we would have distinguished persons of that acclaim among us, with us for major meetings, but they wouldn't be with us long, and they wouldn't seem relaxed with us. They would some of them would give the impression that they were with us, and the impression that they were making was strong sometimes. But I didn't see it as a situation that offered a relaxed atmosphere. The atmosphere was not relaxed. But last night, I witnessed the most relaxed atmosphere that I have witnessed between Muslims and very notable, distinguished leaders from the outer community, from the government or public world of politics, public service. We're very happy over that. We think that's an indication. That's an indication that our worth is being established and people are accepting us for our true worth. And I hope that you will feel the same thing that I felt, because it makes you feel better inside, and it helps your own condition as a Muslim to feel good inside. It doesn't help our condition as Muslims to feel bad inside. And seeing persons as the distinguished persons we saw last night joining us in our testimonial dinner and awards banquet, and being so at home and relaxed with us, is really a great encouragement to me to work harder for this cause that I have accepted and many others have accepted. Our address today is on community and personal advancement. Our desire is always to see what we offer be a factor for influencing more progress in the community life and more progress in the personal life of those who attend the gatherings. Many times we work hard for something and we are not able ourselves to clearly identify what we're working for. We simply say we're working to please Allah. We're working for the deen. I hear the common expression now, we're working for the deen. And most of the people that we are talking to, they still don't know any Arabic, you know. And we say we are working for the deen, and they don't. They just hear a word. They don't know what you're talking about half the time. But I understand the spirit and everything. It's nice to see us get attached to these new words, working for the deen. Say we're working for the religion, so the people, everybody will know what we're talking about. We're working for the religion. We're working for Allah, God, Lord of the worlds, and we're working for the religion. And you say, well, you know what we have to do? We have to give the people the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet. That's true. We have to give the people the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet. But suppose we were talking to a different audience, an audience of individuals who were, for many generations, having the Quran, knowledgeable in the Quran, having the Sunnah, the life history of Prophet Muhammad, that is, and being familiar with it, then what would your purpose be then in preaching them the Quran and the Sunnah of the Prophet? What would your purpose be then? To remind them? To remind them? Suppose they are a group of people that are very well up on what you're talking about, and they are always reminding themselves. There are many Muslims who don't need anybody to remind them of the Quran, of what's in the Quran, and what's in the life of the Prophet, peace be on him. They are very well up on that, and they accept the personal responsibility to keep their own minds remembering what Allah has revealed, in remembering the life, work of our Prophet, peace and blessing be on him. In America, we should know what we are trying to reach. We should know what we are aiming for. We should know what we are after when we stand before an audience and begin to talk to them on our concerns, the Islam, al-Islam, the religion, the life of Muhammad, the Prophet, peace be on him, or Quran, Sunnah, or any other subject within the big context, within the broad focus of our religion. We should know what we're after. What are we after? You don't speak to every audience alike. Audience differ as to their concerns and as to their needs. They will have different concerns. They will have different needs. In America, our needs are greatly different from the needs of many Muslims in many of the lands or countries of the East, and Middle East, Far East, where Muslims live as nations, in North Africa and West Africa and East Africa, and even some near in South Africa, in the southern part of Africa, that is, not in South Africa, but in this country, the nation, so-called nation by that name, I'm not talking about that, and in the Far East, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, China even, and Russia even, many Muslims, all over the world, Europe, in the islands of the Pacific, and all over the world, so many Muslims. And when we meet them, we'll find that they have different concerns and different needs, although we all have the same general concern, and that is the concern for the Muslim, for his religion, for his Muslim life. We all share that general broad concern, but we should recognize that when we are addressing the audience, we should recognize that the audience will have certain sensitivities that are characteristic of their life and experience. And we should try to recognize those sensitivities and do our best to present the religion to them, respecting what their sensitivities are, what their concerns, major concerns are, what their real needs are. Many things that we can, I would say, put small emphasis on. When, for example, a Muslim leader will make a big mistake just preaching faith and goodness to American audience. The big mistake will be that they are used to that. That's the way that the religious people of America comes to them most of the time. Faith and goodness. Believe and be good. Believe and be good. You know? So if a Muslim says that, can you say that any better than church people say it? Believe and be good. You can't say it any better than church people say it. So we have to find out what does our religion offer that is of benefit to the people that we are talking to? And how does our religion address their situation, their condition? And then do our best to present the religion with that kind of respect. And if we do so, the outcome will be positive for the people. The outcome will be positive. Whether they embrace what we believe in or not, the outcome will be positive because you are addressing their concerns. If Allah has given a healing medicine for ills, and if you recognize the ills and the medicine in the religion for those ills, and you administer it, whether the people acknowledge La ilaha illallah, there's but one God, the Kalima, the creed of the Muslims, and Muhammad is his messenger, or not, they will be benefited. They will be benefited. So I'm the type of person that feels that we should be preachers, teachers of the religion, or preachers of the religion, with a awareness of the practical approach, not just to be moved by emotions, feelings, but to be moved by what is practical. And if you're a true believer, you don't have to worry about emotions and feelings. A true believer, if he worries about emotions and feelings, he worries about drowning in them. He worries about the danger of giving himself too much to emotions and feelings. That's what I'm saying. So a true believer, he doesn't have to make a point of coming across as an emotional pack of energy or something like that. No. If he does that, he's going to mess up. He's going to lose himself, and the people will all lose. And we should look for what is practical and to work with that kind of respect for what is the practical need in the life of the audience that we are addressing. And my opinion is that whenever I'm addressing any African-American group or any group of American spirit, my opinion is that what we need is just good sense. The biggest thing we are lacking is just good sense. And it so happens that our religion, more so than any religion that I know, and I think I'm pretty much up on religion, our religion addressed the human being as a creature of intelligence. He's a creature of faith. He's a political creature. Our religion recognizes him in all of the major roles or major persuasion, political persuasion, academic, social, moral. All of these are recognized and addressed in our holy book and by our prophet, peace be on him. But the first recognition of the form of man is that of a creature of sense, a creature of sense, a creature of intelligence, a creature with rational ability, a creature able to reason, to make decisions, to have choices, to choose between right and wrong, to choose between what is sense and what is nonsense, what is good for him and what is bad for him, what promises him a good life and what promises him a bad life. See, the human being should also be able to sense where something is taking him. Not just what it's doing right now, but where it's taking him. And our religion wants us to be aware of that. They want us to be aware of where we are, where we should be, where we should be going, and where we are likely to go if we are no caring people, just don't care about anything, you know? So, in addressing this topic, we are not going directly at community, the need for community to advance, or the need for the person, the individual person, to advance in society or in his private life. We are going at those conditions that we think are most responsible for people succeeding and failing. So we are not going directly at the subject of advancement for society, advancement for the individual person, but rather going at the condition or the conditions that make possible or invite success and failure. And this is the best way. This is the answer. This is the help. Everything needs the climate if it is growing, if it is life. It needs the climate. You can't have a good harvest unless the climate is right.
You have the seed, you have the land, but the climate has to be right. If the climate is right, then most likely you'll get a good crop, a good harvest. Likewise for the human production. And I mean the human productivity in the broadest sense. Some of us want to produce as families. Some of us want to produce as employees in the job market. Some want to produce as leaders. You have many needs. whatever the need is, we need, whatever our particular need is, we need a climate. We need a climate for life and growth. And the revealed religions, not just our religion, the major revealed religions aim for just that. They aim for bringing about a climate that favors community life and individual life. If the climate is right, the community will grow, the community will advance, and the people, as individuals, will also grow and advance. If the climate is right. A climate for our sensitivity. A climate for our mental sensitivities. A climate for our moral sensitivities. A climate for our social sensitivities. The great land we live in, America, with all that it has to offer in the way of science, culture, even culture. But look at the state of the family in America. Not only in America now, in most of the world. The state of the family, for the most part, is very sad. Very sad. Are we so stupid that we can't manage family life? No, we have the education to manage family life. Are we so poor we can't manage family life? No, we have money to manage family life. There was a time not long ago, 30 or 40, 50 years ago, that's not long, when families really poor, still in hunger, still in the pains of hunger in their stomachs every day almost, were able to keep a good family life, good family sensitivities, good respect among members of the family, good treatment of each other, and good treatment of the children by the taught parents, and good treatment of parents taught children. They were able to do that. But today, it's very, very hard to find families like that. It's because, not because we don't have money, it's not because we don't have education enough, intelligence enough. Something else is missing. So we need the climate. And I repeat, the biggest need that I recognize in this society is the need for good sense. Just common good sense. Now, you can be very intelligent, you can be very educated formally. That is from a school, a real physical school. This college, that university. You can be educated in that formal sense and still be unprepared for common sense life. We find many people today with all the education but no ability to manage common sense life. They have the same problems that used to be the problems of what we call the stupid, illiterate people. They can't manage their money. Yes, they can't manage their money. They get big income. They can't manage their money. They're always in debt. always in financial trouble. They can't manage the social life of the home. Always having problems. Family torn apart. So that tells us that man needs something that he can't give himself by himself. He needs help from Allah. He needs help from his Maker, from his Lord, to bring him back to good sense. Now, help comes two ways, mainly. Help comes to one by means out of our control, or out of his control. That is, you're just a good person and the heavens smiles on you. And you get help. God helps you. You get help. But that kind of help is like the help we give babies. As the babies grow up, get older and more responsible, they join us, they're adults now. That kind of help doesn't keep coming. And if it keeps coming, it's not enough help to dignify you in the world of grown-ups. Because it's coming to a baby, and it's baby help. That is, for example, you have problems at home that's making you sad and everything. God bless you. Certainly, you find the attitude of the house changing and the family's being nice. But still, you're just as poor. You're just as poor. And you have no new ambitions. You're not going after bigger things in the world. But you're surviving and you're happy. Oh, yes. Oh, our family happy now. God bless you. Just turn the hearts of the family and we get along fine now. Well, that was help to babies. And the babies are getting along fine now. The other help that comes is help that comes not just because of the goodness of the heart, but it becomes because of the urge of intelligence. The urge of intelligence. There's an urge of intelligence that says, hey, this got to make sense. And this level of living that I have is not fair. And you don't look out there for somebody to blame. This kind of intelligence I'm talking about, it makes the person aware of his own resources. It is on self-worth. It makes him feel happy about himself. He's happy to think of himself as a moral being and as an intellectual being, an intelligent being, a being of intellect. Even though he's perhaps at that time is not an intellectual, but he thinks of himself as a moral being and as a being of intellect. That's the kind of help that grows us up from baby to adult life. So it's not enough just to have a whole lot of faith and be good and want to be good. You like that. You know moral, the term moral is the Western term. And the nature of morality in the West differs from the nature of morality in Muslim society. The nature of morality, the very word is different. Because moral in English has to do with good and bad, right? Good and bad. Moral, the term moral, has to do with good and bad. And moral, the very meaning itself, is subject to change. depending on the moral trends in the Western society. So what was morally offensive when I was a boy is an approved thing today. It is not morally offensive anymore. So we don't have that kind of idea of morality. We don't have that kind of moral term for moral in the Islamic world. And if you're really a knowledgeable Christian, you know there's no place for that kind of idea in Christianity. That's a secular world idea. And it's harmful. It's bad. Because it does not establish permanently for us an idea, a perception of what is good and best for us. It leads us to the trends of the culture regarding moral thought and moral behavior. To be at one time fed with good moral sensitivity in the name of moral life, and at another time to be fed with disease sensitivities in the name of the same moral life. So we need a climate. We need a climate for productive life. A climate for productive community life, a climate for the productive life in the persons and individuals. How did our religion, Al-Islam, since we are most familiar with that, and that's our religion, so we should talk about Al-Islam, and the great majority here are people who profess to be Muslims, and I believe most of you are, although I know a few of you are liars, because it just speaks so loudly from you. Few of you are liars. But I believe most of you are Muslims. So, since most of us are Muslims, and I'm a Muslim myself, so we should see how our religion has treated the human life to bring about that climate for productive growth. I have to get my glasses now. They're a little help so I can find them. Yeah. Maybe before going directly to our religious knowledge, the sources of our religious knowledge, Quran and the Sunnah, the life of our Prophet, I should go to what has been said maybe of Muslim worth by non-Muslims. Non-Muslim writers, authors on history, on the development of society. There's a book by Haider Damit called Muslim Contribution to Civilization. And in this book, he quotes Western authors. I'm just going to read some portions to you to say this, that we don't represent a religion that hasn't proven its effectiveness. Our religion has proven its effectiveness. In history, it has been recorded Many of us think because a thing is not serving us well today, it never had any more value to us than it has to us today. There are many things that we have today that are not serving us well, that served us very well in times gone by and had great value for us then. So that should tell us that the thing itself is not responsible for us not getting the benefit. Something has happened to us to cut off the benefit. If this religion brought great benefit to society in time gone by, then we shouldn't doubt the power of this religion to do the same in any other time. Because the condition of man is not so much a matter of what the world is or what the world represents as a challenge to him, but it is more what a matter of what he represents as a challenge to himself. Many nations have been free from oppression, societies that is, have been free from oppression. They have been free from invasion of outside enemies. They have had their independence. They have had their freedom. They have had good life. Wasn't oppressed by anybody. Wasn't bothered by anybody. No progress. No progress. Resources were abundant everywhere. They lived in a rich place, rich place, rich in natural resources. No progress. Just lived as babies for generations, for hundreds of years. Just lived as babies. Why? It's because the self condition was not awakened. The self and the self condition had not awakened in them. So that's what has to be to happen. Then we find people who have been oppressed in the worst way and live under oppression one generation after another for hundreds of years, and even oppression won't force them to be aggressive, but instead just make them content to live under others, under the domination of others. This is history. And then we find, to the contrast of that, nations that have resisted oppression, and before oppression came, they were not really showing any superior ability. But when after oppression, they began to show superior ability, oppression awakened the self-respect in them, the self-respect and the destiny in them was awakened by oppression. So I say again, it is not the condition of the world most of the time that makes the difference for people. It's the human condition that makes the difference for people. Look how prosperous America has been. But look how America is failing now in competition with several nations of this world. Failing in competition with several nations of this world. Though she had the upper hand. She had the world in her hand, in fact. She had the world in her own hand. And still leads most of the world in the field of technology, science and technology. Still leads. But it's failing at home. So the answer is not the material condition. The material condition, we want computers in every house. We want every house to have all the computers in it. And beef up the sciences, beef up the sciences. More science, more of the sciences, more of the practical subjects in the schools, and et cetera, et cetera. That's going to make the difference. That's not going to make the difference if the human condition is neglected. You can give your son everything of material worth that he can possibly manage. Give him more money than he can spend. Give him so much money, he's wondering what to do with it. You can send him to the best school, give him the best environment, and still sometimes that son will not be healthy-minded, will not be productive. You say, oh, I'm just investing in him, and it just seems to be no use. No use. Why? Because the human condition in him is a neglected thing. You're not neglecting his needs and environment. He is neglecting his human condition. And he has to have a climate to turn on the human life for him and to make him begin to see himself as a great creation of Allah, a great creation of God, to see himself in that way and to value himself, to appreciate himself. Now, I used to be a little bit shy in religion myself. I was a little bit shy when it came to addressing human being, the importance of self. I was a little shy. I thought that that might be taking the importance away from the more important thing, and that is God. And that kind of shyness in people often lead them to become preachers of the world to come only. Just get people ready for the world to come, you see, the hereafter. That kind of shyness in us will do that. In fact, we will reject the world and we start to invite people to separate from the world and get away from material interests. Get away from this and get away from that, you know. Follow this formula for developing holiness. And this formula for developing purity. And this formula for transforming you into an angel. You know, so that's the route we sometimes take. Not knowing really the true picture of the world that Allah wants us to see, that God wants us to see. I hope I don't have to keep saying God. Allah is God. And for us, that's the name of our God in Quran, and it's the most pleasing name for us. And I hope that Christians don't feel that we are slighting them when we say Allah. We're not slighting you at all. We'd love for you to know our term. And hope that you can appreciate our interest and our attachment to the term as we understand your interest and appreciate your interest and attachment to the term that you know. Term for the one Lord and Creator. It's the same for you as it is for me, same for all of us. Allah. Yes, so we need a climate for productive communities and productive individuals. And it's not going to come by no mechanical method. Not going to come by a mechanical method. It's going to come by a condition in yourself. A condition in yourself that makes you different than those people who neglect themselves and the world. It's said in so many ways in our religion and also in other major religions. So now, let's hear what this author has to say, quoting writers of the West. Muslim contribution to civilization. by concentrating their thought on individual events, Muslim scholars were able to develop scientific methods much further than their Greek or Alexandrian predecessors. They were responsible for the introduction or the restoration of scientific methods to the medieval Europe. Now, this is history. And I believe most of us know what the scientific method is. The scientific method is that discipline of the rational thought that look for objective facts and reality, objective truths. That is not influenced. They try to keep from having what the field of study or the things they are investigating being influenced by their subjective influences, such as how I feel about it.
Thank you. you'll be so free.